Hey everyone, the reviews are coming in for our book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons. Scream Magazine called it really entertaining and often amusing, like a greatest hits album with just the good kills. We're so happy they like it, and we think you will too. Pick it up in paperback, e-format, or hardcover at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. On with the show.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. Horrible.
Hey, wait, there's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 125. Long-awaited sequel to the seminal horror classic, the 1960s Alfred Hitchcock, Norman Bates, pop culture phenom. We're talking about Psycho 2 today.
Right. This is Psycho 2. This is directed by Richard Franklin and written by Tom Holland. Now, incredible, because this movie came out 23 years after the original, where the original came out in 1960. Here we are in 1983, and they're making a sequel. We're living in the age right now of these unwanted sequels that come out decades after the film that preceded it. I mean, the other day, I watched maybe like 5 minutes of Dumb and Dumber 2. And I couldn't make it past that. It was garbage. I mean,
there's one where the principals did not take part. Well, honestly, Jeff Daniels was was the lone.
They made that, and then they actually made another sequel.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it was again Frank and Lloyd and Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. The reality is, if you make a movie, and there's a crew member on the set that's pregnant, okay, and then you make a sequel, and the baby that was like, you know, in the womb at that point is now old enough to vote.
Too much
time has passed, you know.
Yeah.
And just a couple weeks ago, the multiplexes were beset by Independence Day Resurrection. Again, another movie 2 decades after the original. Who asked for this? Who wanted this? You know,
nobody needed it.
Yeah, you know, there's such a dearth of originality in Hollywood now that they're just going back to movies that are, you know, from the 80s and or the early 90s, and they're either rebooting it or remaking it. This was not such common practice in the early 80s, where you would make a sequel to a movie that came out, you know, over 2 decades ago, let alone one as renowned as Psycho. So I gotta give props to Holland and Franklin and Anthony Perkins and Vera Miles and all the other people that came back for doing this and doing it well, you know? Because this is, in my opinion, a really good movie. I think you're a little more lukewarm on it than I am.
Yeah, but I would agree. It really holds up in many respects to the original, and you can't go wrong having Tom Holland's sharp writing behind it. Mm-hmm. So it had all the elements to make it good. So it wasn't just some cast-off, something done on a lark.
And I can just imagine, when this came out in 83, I was quite young, and I do recall seeing advertisements for it in the newspaper, and that could have been my first introduction to Norman Bates, just seeing this sinister face holding a key, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
yeah. For business. But I can imagine the critics just sharpening their knives, like ready to eviscerate this thing, because how dare you? How dare you? You know, Alfred Hitchcock is the master. In fact, not only was this made so many years hence after the first, I believe this was the very first and only, because then they actually started making other sequels to this one afterwards, but at the time, the very first and only sequel to a Hitchcock film.
Hmm. So I can't say I can recall Rear Window 2 or, no, you know, well, or I mean, Rope 3 or whatever. You know?
They remade Rear Window for TV, Dennis, starring Christopher Reeve. Hmm. There was a really shitty TV movie called The Birds, Two Lands End, but I mean, that was after. I mean, this was the first, and again, I can just imagine the critics is going, see, there was no internet back then, so it wouldn't be like Ghostbusters right now, or like, for, you know, months and months, you know, before mm-hmm. they would actually, you know, when they announced the production, people were just like, it's going to be the worst thing ever, it's going to be the worst thing ever, and destroying the
fanboys getting their panties in a knot exactly. over some movie they haven't seen, and whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, the early reviews for Ghostbusters are coming out, and they're actually fairly positive, but, you know, that movie has yet to open, and, you know, we'll see. Mm. But getting back to Psycho 2, in my opinion, the deck was stacked against them. But at the same time, they did have Anthony Perkins coming back. You could not have made it without him. And they had another returning cast member, Vera Miles, playing Lila Loomis, nay, Lila Crane.
Yes.
Sister of Marion, of mm-hmm. course.
And it's a great way to reintroduce, you know, Norman Bates to the public again, because the theme of this movie, I was thinking it's almost a little bit like A History of Violence in a way. David Cronenberg, it's mm-hmm. recidivism, and can people change? Mm. And we recently had a terrible case in Canada, in the West, where a guy on a Greyhound bus was decapitated by a fellow passenger.
Well, this was a couple years ago.
Years ago. The passenger was deemed unfit to stand trial, mentally unfit. He was institutionalized. He's since been given limited release into the community. I want to say it's Winnipeg, but you have to Google that yourself. And this was not welcomed by the public. And similarly, Norman Bates, were introduced to him as the guy who did all these deeds, and he's let loose under the, I guess, direction of a psychiatrist, and he's
Dr.
helped
Raymond,
out. Yes,
by Robert Loggia.
Oh, the amazing Robert Loggia from Sopranos and a bunch of other Italian American stereotype movies, and Prezi's Honor, whatever. And just Over the Top, Sopranos, Prezi's Honor, and Over the Top.
Is that mind and arm wrestling when I say that? Yeah,
one of these things is not like the other. And the community, to their credit, at least a few of them, I mean, they say it's forgive and forget, mm-hmm. the Christian thing to do. The owner of this local greasy spoon mm-hmm. agrees to give this guy a job when he comes out. And
well, here's
what an interesting thing.
Well,
what a great thing.
Exactly. We don't need to recount the events of Psycho. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what happened in Psycho, shame on you.
Exactly, yeah.
Shut this podcast off right now and go watch yes. Psycho. When this film begins, Norman Bates is sitting in a courtroom, and there's a hearing as to whether or not he's deemed sane and fit to re-enter society. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the length of time that transpired between the original movie and the sequel worked in this movie's favor, because you would think,
perfectly.
Okay, well, this man was institutionalized for 23 years, and now finally he's deemed sane, and he's deemed fit to go back into the world. Now, there is one protester, and that is
The family of
Lila Loomis, who was, you know, obviously her sister was one of Norman's victims from the first movie, but, you know what, he no longer has these psychotic delusions, and he's ready to go back in society. Now, of course, some people are willing to do the Christian thing and forgive and forget. Other people, they kind of give him the cold shoulder. His reputation does precede him, but he's brought back to the house, the motel, and at first I'm thinking, like, if you don't want him to relapse back into insanity,
don't put him in the exact setting. Send them off to the other side of the country.
Like halfway house. Yeah, or something, you know? But I mean, they did mention that when with Dr. Grimm saying, "Are you sure you want to come back? Are you sure?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Well, you know, I think it's best for my healing." And he's given a job, as you said, mm-hmm. he's given a job at a local greasy spoon as sort of like a chef's assistant.
Well, the tie-in, obviously, this business has been run. We're talking about the hotel. Norman Bates' hotel, where he entertained guests
motel,
in the first
yeah.
one, where mm-hmm. he said to Marion Crane, "You eat like a bird," and all the infamous stuff from the first movie. Mm-hmm. It's being looked after by a kind of a sleazy figure who is Toomey.
Toomey.
Who is
Was it Toomey or Toonie?
I'm not
I think I'm it was sure. I wrote down Toonie, but it doesn't
matter.
Oh,
okay,
matter.
Yeah.
I was thinking about our $2 coin here in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. Colloquially known as a Toonie, a $2 yeah. coin if you're ever in Canada. Yeah, this guy is a bit of a sleaze hound, a bit of a slumlord, and he's been taking over the business and, according to Norman, turning it into
an adult motel.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Which is a great tie-in to the original, because those were different times in the 60s where things were a lot more proper, and now everything is arguably maybe gone to hell, and sexual mores have opened up, and he is turning this place into a rent-by-the-hour place for people to do their stuff.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, because I mean, one of the, part of the subtext of the first movie is Norman's sexual repression. And you got to think that, I mean, every time he falls for a woman, and I mean, he does have sexual urges, as we see in the first movie with the people, right?
Yes.
The other side, the mother comes out, and that person is killed. So, you know his mother did a number on him. And, you got to figure, okay, well, he's probably never had sexual relations in his entire life. So, Norman Bates is repressed sexually. He's prudish. And when he finds out that Toomey has turned this into an adult motel, rented by the hour, he finds drugs in the room, he's not happy, and he fires Toomey. And Toomey's not happy, and I love this line, he goes, well, at least my customers have fun, your customers get dead, murdered by you psycho,
It's true.
And this is the great Dennis Franz,
yes,
playing Toomey.
From whatever that cop show I never watched.
No Sweet Blues, okay, yeah. Blue, yes. Yeah. The man who's contractually obligated to play a cop in the show is blue in the title.
Well, when you look like a cop, that's what you're destined to. And really, this was the original Mommy Issues
killer.
Horror antagonist. Slacker, and this can be seen anywhere from Maniac to... Okay, it was more Daddy Issues when Don't Answer the Phone or whatever, one of these things. But Mommy and some issue with the parental figure, common enough, but this started the ball rolling, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we have Norman Bates back to society. And I don't know if it's me as a viewer or the way they set up this script, this character, but from the very get-go, he's sympathetic. And I think a lot of it had to do with Anthony Perkins' masterful portrayal. Even the first movie, he was somewhat sympathetic. And you're rooting for this guy. He's innocent.
Yeah.
He's guileless.
He's a loner. He's kind of pathetic. He has no friends. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult position to be in. Everyone can relate to that, at least in some point in their life.
You want Norman Bates to rejoin society, live a productive life, and that's the end of that. But certain circumstances transpire, which we'll get into in a moment or two, which cause him to question him. So, yes, he has some people in his corner. He's got Dr. Raymond. Even the police chief in the town is sort of on his side, which is kind of interesting. You think that the police chief would be like, oh, this psycho back in my community? No way, no how. We'll run him out on the rails. But no, he's given a job, and he's doing whatever he can to live the right way, to live the right life. And he meets a pretty young waitress played wonderfully by Meg Tilly.
Yes, he doesn't sound anything like her sister, but a terrific performance, just a great and pretty as well. This really sympathetic, we find out later that she's a psychology student, of course, but she takes a shine to him initially. She's had a bit of a rift with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
She's a server in this diner.
Right.
She needs a place to stay.
Right.
And good-natured Norman offers her accommodations in this infamous house.
But you got to remember, he also came to her rescue because Toonie came to the diner and was...
And he's a lecherous pig,
hitting
on her. Yes,
harassing Norman, and he was hitting on her. Norman came to her rescue, and then he offers her a place to stay. And we're getting so many callbacks to the original. First of all, he's serving her cheese sandwiches and milk, just like he served Marion Crane in the first movie. It's a torrential rainstorm, just as it was when he was talking to Marion Crane in the first movie. There's so many awesome callbacks to the first movie. We see the taxidermy, that sort of stuff. But he offers her a place to stay, and he thinks that she doesn't know who he really is, but she knows. And there's this sort of tentative kind of push-pull between them in this relationship. She does take a shine to him, but I think it's sort of like a platonic thing. I didn't really see it.
Yeah, and almost maybe in an academic way as well. So he's a case study to incorporate into her, I think, what she studies in university as well. But also, I guess he does come to her rescue. Yeah. So there's a weird tension when she goes in, and they don't introduce her that she's, oh yeah, I'll stay with you. Like, she has trepidation for sure, especially with that house.
But ultimately, he implores her to stay because he's afraid of being alone in the house because of the memories contained therein. So he wants her to stay, and she does. And they do form this... I look at it almost like a father-daughter relationship. But...
interesting family dynamics, for sure. Well, okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, age-wise, for sure.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
But things are happening. Things are conspiring. Which you're making Norman question his sanity. He's starting to see notes. You know? Get that slut out of the house.
Yeah, one of the meal tickets... at the diner, instead of like, oh, burger and fries, okay, I'm going to go prep that. It spins around, and the ticket says, yeah, like, I don't want that whore around. Mm-hmm. And Norman has a meltdown in the restaurant, admitting as much to his superior that he got a note that was intended for him to piss him off. He didn't initially attribute it to his mother, but he says that Toomey's playing a prank on him or something. And they can, of course, cannot find this order ticket, and so they're starting to question his sanity right off the bat.
And Norman is petrified of losing his sanity. He even says back at the house, like, I don't kill people anymore. You know, this is a man that wants to retain his sanity at all costs. But yet again, I mean, we keep seeing callbacks. Mary takes a shower.
Yes, you know? And the eye is peering, and this is what, because I saw this at a quite young age, and my parents were total Hitchcock buffs, so I'd seen everything from Rear Window to Rope to Psycho to The Birds to Topaz to, like, you name it. Like, I was introduced very early, so when I saw that cover in the video store with Norman with the key peering at me, I thought, oh, I have to get this. And when I saw the nudity, I thought this was probably what Hitch might have wanted to do in the original but couldn't because of the mores of the time. Like, it was a mainstream release by a mainstream director. He could not do that, I don't think. Maybe H.G. Lewis would have done it, but again, like, well, this was the kind of sleaze I wanted to see. I mean, for God's sake, the guy runs a disreputable motel. It adds to the tension that he's not only a taxidermist weirdo, a loner, awkward with women, and that he should be doing this on a lark as well. Like, that's creepy, and an invasion of privacy. It adds a sinister level, and he's watching her and spying on her.
Is he spying on her? That's the question. Now, it's interesting you mention, though, because, I mean, Hitchcock's one of his I don't know if it was his last film or one of his last films, Frenzy.
Yes.
That was a sleazy film. That was like the most, I would say, like, almost grindhouse-esque of all of Hitch's films.
But again, that was 71 it took for him to do that. I love that one.
No, for sure. It's one of his most underrated movies. Fantastic. But anyhow, Toomey does not take kindly being fired. He comes back in a drunken rage, and he's trying to goad Norman. He's calling him a psycho. He's throwing things at the window. Norman's getting phone calls. Whoever's on the other end of the line claiming to be his mother. Mm. And Toomey gets killed by somebody wearing a very familiar polka dot dress. Mm-hmm. So as an audience, we're thinking, what is going on here? Has Norman snapped? And as it turns out, and I guess we're going to have to do a little bit of a spoiler, but Mary, pretty young Mary, is actually the daughter of
Marion's sister.
Marion. Mm. And she was supposed to work in cahoots with Lila Loomis to drive Norman nuts.
But enters into the Stockholm Syndrome kind of relationship with Norman. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting dynamic. Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily would have gone with that, but it was interesting as a screenwriter. It's an odd conceit to buy into. What are your thoughts on that?
I bought it all the way because, yet again, I thought he was just so sympathetic, so earnest, so guileless, as a man who just wanted to pick up the fragments of his life and...
Well, that's why, like, if I had written this film, I would have probably... What's the opposite of downplayed? Upplayed? Is that even a word? Okay, I would have upplayed the academic interest Mary had in him because... To me, as you said, they have a father-daughter dynamic, but given his reputation, she It seems a beggar's belief that she would have gotten that close to a guy who'd committed all these acts.
But then it went from maybe academic to human. Because mm-hmm. then she started saying, because other murders started happening. And
even then, she, yeah.
Yeah, at this point, Norman, because of all of the forces that are conspiring to make him to make him go insane again, be it the phone calls, be it the letters, be it what have you, he started to be convinced that, yes, I am insane. I did those killings. She's like, you couldn't have, Norman. You couldn't have. It's impossible. You could not have done it. And now we have this very interesting dynamic where Norman is insisting that he committed these murders. Yes. And why is he doing that? Because he knows what he's capable of from, you know, 20-odd years ago. And Mary is insisting that he could not have. She tells the mother, she tells Lyle, leave him alone. He's changed. He's a nice man. He doesn't deserve this. Let him be. So, as far as upplaying, downplaying the therapeutic interest she had in Norman, mm-hmm. I don't know. I totally bought into the fact that, like, because I bought into Norman as a man who really just was sane.
I could have accepted that too, but I would have probably been able to accept more of a hands-off relationship where maybe she helps him out at a third-party location rather than just going in there and becoming so involved in his mm-hmm. world. I would be worried for my own safety as a male to go into that house with a guy who had just been released like that. So maybe she's made of sterner stuff than I am, but I was like, what are you doing? You know, back off. But again, it's an interesting idea for sure.
Well, ultimately, I mean, the question is, because as I said before, murders are happening, bodies go missing, lakes are being dragged, again, call back
dragged
to the
as opposed
movie.
To dredged, yeah. It's like, you drag a lake or dredge it? Okay, whatever you do. There's, of course, two stoners, so you're updating the material again, because along with sexual mores, the drug culture has become so pervasive mm-hmm. that you have these two typical co-ed stoners who break into the infamous house, they go into the basement, smoke weed, try to get it on, and the male half okay. is mysteriously
and
murdered.
That, but I mean, this is a nod of the hat to the trend of time, the slasher film, where mm-hmm. any time that you engage in illicit drugs
Vice, yeah.
and sex, relations, yeah. you're going to get killed by the slasher.
True,
so they're
yeah.
down in the basement, they're high, they're shopping. So,
and that was also interesting, too, because there is a survivor, because she clambers out of the window, runs to the police and says, hey, my boyfriend was killed at this house. And the police could have maybe taken this tale a little more seriously given Norman Bates' proclivities toward this crime, but they seem rather lackadaisical about her story. It's like, a murder took place at an infamous locale where a murderer mm-hmm. dispatched several women 2 decades ago, and they're like, you know, and...
It's interesting, because, I mean, you're a lot more critical than I am, because, you know, seeing this movie, like I said before, like, I personally, from the very beginning, I just was charmed by Anthony Perkins, as I was in the first movie before the shock reveal, which, you know, I don't know, you know, we're not going to save, you know, we're not going to spoil a 23-year-old movie, yeah. but the reality is, I was rooting for the man from the very beginning of the game. I'm like, please don't lose your grip on your sanity. Please don't be the one committing these murders. Ultimately, that's the question. Is Norman, has he gone over the edge? Is he, once again, I don't want to say what he's doing, mm-hmm. but is he once again, you know, responsible for killing, or is it somebody else? And let's just say that there are certain forces that want to push him over the edge, and there are certain forces that want to keep him sane.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very interesting push-pull dynamic. Throughout it all, you have Norman Bates himself convinced that he is insane, convinced that he is doing the killings, and you have this young girl who's saying, Norman, no, it's not you. There are other people trying to make you think that, but it's not you. And to me, it was just, it worked.
Wonderful. Well, yeah, a terrific idea. You know, the theme being, again, do people change? Can people change?
I think a lot of it, too, has to do with Anthony Perkins. I mean, his performance, I mean, he owns the character, the stutter, the stammer.
Almost, I felt he had a little bit of Jimmy Stewart cadence to his voice. And I'm not going to imitate him as I don't want to sound like some 80s hack yeah. comedian, but he had that cadence. But also, Tony Perkins, obviously, infamously as well, repressed his sexuality during the time, and it only came out later with his unfortunate demise
that, yeah,
and
yeah.
with his, you know, sexual orientation and mm-hmm. stuff. So that added another dynamic too, but he's just one of the just great quintessential oddballs, just a skinny guy with weird mannerisms and who you but can easily root for in a way you couldn't. You know, a charmer.
Yeah, and you just want, you root for this guy. It's almost like you want to give him a big hug. You know, he's like this lost kid, and of course he was a young kid in Psycho, and 20 years later, he's not a kid anymore, but he's like a child. He's, mm-hmm. he's just so guileless, you just want to see him succeed, and you want to give him a hug. You're kind of smirking out because you don't agree with me.
No, I agree, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, again, the cops, they dredge the lake, they pull the... get a winch and pull the car out and find the bodies, and
they find Toomey's belongings, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And the question remains, I mean, and this is an ending I don't want to spoil because it's a very unique and interesting mm-hmm. ending. Is it, it has no one based on crazy, or is it somebody else?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
That's it.
And we don't want to say anything more about mm-hmm. that.
But when you have, as I said before, the temerity to make a sequel to a bona fide classic 23 years later, and have a movie as successful as this, and it wasn't just successful critically, it was very successful commercially, to the point that there was then a Psycho 3, which was not quite as good. That one was actually directed by Anthony Perkins, mm-hmm. and then there was a Psycho 4 at the beginning.
I'm trying to recall whether I saw it. If this, you know, obviously this is not a good sign if you can't recollect any of it, but I think there was just boatloads of nudity in it, and it followed the slasher template.
Psycho 3.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so yeah. I did see that, yeah. But again, it's escaped my memory. It's pretty unremarkable.
Psycho 4 was directed by Mick Garris, and it was sort of like a prequel. It starred Henry Thomas, the kid that played E.T., as a young Norman Bates, Olivia Hussey from Black Christmas and Romeo and Juliet, as a first Romeo and Juliet as the mother, and it wasn't very good. And then, of course, came the god-awful, unnecessary...
Shot for shot
Bola. Remake by Gus Van Sant, oof. Starring Vince Vaughn. I actually had the displeasure of seeing that in the cinema on opening weekend, and yeah.
Now, how close was that to Elephant? When that, I can't
in
recall.
In terms of like his
time-wise.
I don't know.
Because like, he generally makes good movies, and I don't know what the hell happened with that. But what was the impetus for that?
He also directed Good Will Hunting, so... Hmm.
There we go. Okay.
And the cycle more continues because now we have the Bates Motel TV series, which I must admit I've not seen one episode.
Neither have I.
But it's in my Netflix queue. I really do want to see because I hear it's very good. But this sequel should not have, but for all intents and purposes, should not have worked. It worked. And
definitely. And bridging the gap between like the more tame black and white original with the, I guess, unhinged 80s aesthetic. Right. And the kills were magnificent as well. Mm-hmm. Fantastic effects, too. And they captured the spirit of the original,
yep.
I would argue, with mm-hmm. some occasionally good directorial flourishes and the sort of Escher-type staircase in this yep. crazy house.
Interestingly enough... the filmmakers were given the rights, the ability to use Bernard Herrmann's iconic score, and Lester decided not to. He actually wanted to, you know, commission a brand new score.
Yeah, so they good for him.
They didn't reprise the famous. But yeah, exactly. But it was still, in my opinion, extremely successful.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Before we get to the what have we learned, let's just give it a star rating. Because I say successful, but not...
Definitely, yeah.
But not like, you know, I mean, Psycho is like, you know, you're 4.5 to 5, right? I'm not going to give this 4 stars. I'm going to give it 3.75. And as I said before, just on hubris alone and being able to take something that should not have been done, should not have worked, and made something that did work, yeah, it's I really, really like Psycho 2. I like Psycho 3 as well, but that became, as you said before, was a lot more... unhinged, and...
Okay, before we get to my star rating, because I always forget what I've learned,
okay.
But I also learned that...
I didn't say what I learned.
Oh, okay, so. We'll have to press you for that later. I learned that Norman Bates is an accomplished pianist, and he's tinkling the ivories to, mm-hmm. like, some Beethoven Moonlight Sonata at one point, and that's a neat little scene, even though this piece is overused in movies, but it sees him as it captures the solitary loner that he is. Mm-hmm. He's just... plaintively playing this beautiful piece of music by himself in this big old house. And again, yeah, you've talked about it with Frankenstein. He's the lovable monster in a way. And I was really captivated by him, but not, as I said, get into Mary's immediate trust in him as readily as you might have, but I'm going to happily give it 3 to 3.5 for sure. And it's especially when you compare it to other horror sequels, to bona fide classics, it really comes out in that rare, upper
echelon
of films that are actually worthy of the original. So definitely worth checking out. I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to say what I learned.
Percentile is what I was meaning to say. But, I'm enjoying my pints here, and I couldn't think as clearly as I wanted to. But yeah, in that upper percentile of films that really is a sequel to something that a lot of people were going to be resentful about and immediately have ill will toward. So good on them for making something modern, and looking back at it, it looks terrific too. Mm-hmm. Beautiful looking movie.
Yeah, for sure. And what I learned, I don't know, I mean, it's hard to say. I guess something I learned is that it's quite easy to go into a store and procure a dowdy polka dot dress and a powdered powder grade wig, and that's about all I'm going to say. So, recommendation, Psycho 2?
You have to see it, mm-hmm. for sure.
Excellent.
And you have to check out our podcast and our website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, for a bunch of reviews of genre films, predominantly horror. And check out our book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, which has received wonderful and flattering acclaim in the likes of Scream and LA Weekly and all these publications, and we're thrilled and delighted, and we'd love it if you'd pick up a copy, because it would support our podcast immensely. Mm-hmm. And obviously new episodes of the Really Awful Movies podcast every Friday for your listening enjoyment, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.